speaker. You know there's a VIP one. I'm gonna collect those.
There is?
Yeah.
Well, I think we just bought these. We buy these ribbons at Hobby Lobby. We're gonna just, you know, attach them.
Security.
Hobby Lobby?
Do you not have Hobby Lobbies in California?
But put this into the conversation.
We're going.
Oh, have we been recording
like,
the whole time?
Like 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. Hey,
don't you want to start the show? Get the start.
Donovan, welcome to the Reflex Blue Show.
Welcome, Nate.
This is our third post-How interview episode.
Coming directly from Dressing Room 3 in the Denver, Colorado Convention Center.
Yeah. Again, a way nicer room than we were expecting.
Ding, ding, ding. Ladies' lingerie, floor 5.
And direct from the ladies' lingerie department, we have Russell Brown from Adobe Systems here today. How are you doing?
Senior Creative Director from San Jose, California.
Oh, that sounds impressive.
Yeah, your bio says that...
Oh, don't read the bio! You don't want to read the bio.
Let me give you my bio.
Okay.
When did you get into town?
I arrived here in Denver, Colorado on Friday. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Wait, I thought we were talking about my bio.
I want to talk...
You said not to read it.
Oh, no, I was going to give you...
He's going to do it. He knows himself.
It's the amazing Russell Brown, who's worked at Adobe for the last 25 years. He's made Adobe what it is today. Here he is, Russell Brown.
Now, wow.
I have to say, Adobe's been around 27 years, and I don't remember anything about them the first 2 years, so I will...
That's correct. They weren't anything until I arrived in 1985.
I just want
the studio audience to know that I was 19 when I started Adobe. So just do the math.
1985, you got started 2 years in. You told us on the way out here that they were just working on PostScript at the time. Mm-hmm. What was Adobe like?
Well, Adobe was a small building, one floor. Everyone was a programmer. Everyone had a beard. And it's 1985. They're all programmers. They all have beards. They're writing PostScript. They're creating a language. It goes into the first laser writer. It's the same year that the Apple laser writer came out. So there I am, the laser writer, page maker, Mac draft. I step into a place where everybody had a beard. So what did I do? I grew a full beard.
So you still got a little bit of one half.
Yeah, you never quite got rid of it. Full beard.
Are any of these products around, including the Apple laser writer today?
No, you might find one in an antique store.
But I mean, none of the software programs.
I just want to know what happened to PageMaker.
We gobbled it up. PageMaker was absorbed into Adobe and then InDesign.
I had a soft spot for that. We used to use it back in on my high school newspaper. That was my introduction to things like kerning and leading.
I'm feeling older already.
Oh, sorry.
F the people at Adobe were in diapers when I started, which is really scary.
So, mostly programmers, everyone has beards, small office, and not a lot different than what it is today.
No, because it transitioned from PostScript. That's what kept things alive, PostScript in the beginning of time. And then PostScript had to have, and what I've burned into my brain, you have to have images, text, and graphics. Those are the three ingredients you have to make a page. And so we have to have text. So Adobe Text, the library of type, had to come out. They developed the type library. Graphics, so they developed Adobe Illustrator. And here was this missing thing that Mr. Warnock was looking for the longest time and didn't find it till 1990, and that was photos. That was Photoshop. But in the beginning of time, 1985, I was scanning, 8x10 glossy black and white prints on a scanner the size of an average refrigerator. I am not joking you.
No, I believe you.
A refrigerator on its side, lying down, and you put your artwork in, and you felt like someone's going to have a CAT scan. Maybe you could put a body in this thing. Comes across. And the data came in as a raw data. You got this zeros and ones, and then you had to put in PostScript, start image reading here, end image reading here. I'm writing this stuff. And then you had to tell it the coordinates where you wanted to put this photo, scale the photo, rotate the photo, all in code. I'm going back.
Oh my God.
Let's all go way back. So those are the beginning of the day. Beginning of time, my goal why they hired a graphic designer at Adobe. That was my background. They hired a crazy graphic designer who could show off and create a page without having any tools. So, Russ, we want you to create, put text, graphics, and halftones onto a page without having anything to put them onto the page, because we need to prove that it can be done.
Right, right. So that if you can do it.
That's my first job. And I love it. I was the 38th employee at Adobe, and the 37th employee at Adobe that had been there, had just been fired. So they had just gone through the trauma of the early company. They had to fire their first employee. And so I'm the next person coming into the company. Everybody was so, they didn't want to deal with firing anybody ever again, because there's no HR, right?
Right.
They all had to do it. They all had to feel bad. And so I had to go through, it's probably illegal, I had to go through a trial
fire. Yeah.
And I remember one day the chief lead programmer came in with John Warnock and Chuck Geschke, and they were looking at some graphics I had strewn on the floor, you know, some PostScript things. And it's sort of like I saw it happen come out of their face. Okay. It's like I got the approval.
It's sort of like, that's it. It's, I feel good about what's here.
Feel good. He's not a jerk, and we don't have to fire him. And so I'm lucky to this day to be there. My gosh. I was working at Apple. I worked at Atari. I'm going to let's go way back. I worked at Atari doing video game graphics.
Yes.
To try and get.
I'm ready to talk about that.
That's all Nate wants to talk about now. Video game graphics.
Well, it was back in '85. I'm trying to convince
Atari
graphics. I'm trying to convince young kids to buy Pac-Man by doing in-store displays, and that's what they had me doing as a graphic designer. Don't think about where you were. You thought about it, okay.
Yeah, sorry. Now I'm just dreaming about 1985 Pac-Man in-store displays.
Yeah, so there I am with in-store displays. Working with computers, found computers there, moved to Apple, did some freelance there, and then moved to Adobe.
Now, you just told us you started at Adobe when you were 19.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I was right. 10. No, so 10 over there.
So yeah, so in a very short amount of time,
yes,
you went from Atari to Apple to Adobe at the very beginning of your career.
That's right.
That's not a bad way to start.
Yeah, yeah. We'll stick with your age lies. That's fine. Mm. Okay.
2019.
Okay, I don't know.
So since you've been at Adobe through all of Photoshop's inception, what was your personal favorite of the branding and the packaging? So we'll talk about this because you guys just rebranded CS5, and I know you're not directly, obviously it's not in-house, but obviously you guys oversee some and have input, I assume, with the agencies that you guys now hire to brand these?
Well, you are absolutely wrong. It's only in the beginning of time is 85 to maybe 87, 89, only that beginning of time was I sort of really the senior creative art director. Mm-hmm. And I was involved with packaging for Type, packaging for Illustrator. By the time Photoshop came around, 1990, I had already hired people much more talented than I am and really great designers, because I had other interests I had found this thing called performing on stage and giving presentations about Photoshop, and that was much more interesting than doing packaging or annual reports, which I actually did, I think, in 80. When was that? Oh my, 87, somewhere in there. So I was doing them all then, but you know, I have drifted completely away from the packaging, and that, as you say, it's gone outside of Adobe, or it's gone to designers who knew what they were doing. But in the beginning of the time, working with Lou Anne Cohen at Adobe, I enjoyed, you know, just talking about our early ventures into the Adobe Illustrator packaging and picking up on the Botticelli's Birth of Venus image. Yeah. And sort of bringing that out. There's some great stories behind that, you know.
What was the idea behind the Venus?
Well, Lou Anne was just sketching and thinking about Venus and fine art and curves. It was all about curves.
Yeah.
And there's some beautiful curves to her body as well as her hair, you know, if you didn't notice. And so we like that sort of feel, that art and perfect curves. And so she started putting the curves in the hair, the Botticelli Venus, and I think we purchased the rights to use that imagery, and you know, made it, being Adobe, we wanted to be very legal. But strange story about that, there was a gentleman doing his own art, neon art, where he was putting lines of neon on the Botticelli Venus's.
I'm starting to see where, I remember the packaging, I'm starting to...
You remember this?
Yeah.
So we had these glowing lines indicating curves in Venus, in her hair. And he's trying to sue Adobe now because we stole his idea, his neon art idea. Yikes, but thank goodness.
Because no one was doing that besides this one person, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In the late 80s.
It's very odd. And so, as if he owns the rights to Botticelli's Venus, he owned the rights to drawing lines in her hair. And of course, they looked very similar. But
you're drawing the same lines.
Fortunately, Luann had all of her sketches up to that point, you know, tracings and sketches of what she was doing. And you know, I think just designers, often we might see something, but she had no idea that she was going down that path, or she had not even seen his book on neon art. But just interesting things that happen as a designer comes across those problems. But back to your question, I love the early days of just experimenting with the new technologies, coming up with that early packaging. How do you package fonts? I've never packaged a font before. I'm a designer. I should know how to package a font. That was a sort of a strange assignment.
And they used to come on disc when people purchased them.
Oh, yes. And we foolishly, in the beginning of time, you know, we thought we'd sell fonts and have them encrypted. So you had to have a license and a code, just like you would with Photoshop today.
Sure.
And it seemed all logical because the font manufacturers insisted on it. They didn't want to lose it like you would lose one of your songs out on the internet.
Yeah, I'm already, it may be just early in the morning, but that sounds perfectly reasonable.
It seemed at the time.
Yeah.
But it was not the good workflow for designers, you know, an easy way of using the fonts. And then the font wars started in the PostScript realm. PostScript hadn't quite become the de facto standard on printing. And so, you know, I'm not IBM, but I'm thinking Microsoft brought out their fonts, and then there was this little war that happened, and then we had to break down the doors and say, you know, it's open. It's open. The gates are open.
Yeah.
We have an open type system now. There's no more encryption. You can put these on any machine, Mac or PC. And so I remember that happened at the Siebold conference, and so John Warnock's just sort of, you know, snapped on stage and just made that decision on stage in front of the audience.
All right.
It's quite emotional. He felt sort of tied to it somehow. So I don't know what year that was. It's the pre-Photoshop year. Where are we going? We got off of packaging again.
Yeah, right. It's okay. It turned out we didn't have as much to
let's,
go on.
Let's packaging. Move to, what are you presenting at the HOW conference? What is your role as... What are your sessions that you're speaking on?
Well, I'm currently responsible for at least 1,000 people coming up to the show. No. So I was first introduced to the show a few years ago by Julian Cost. He says, Russ, you need to go to the HOW Design Conference. This is where it's happening. I can't do the early morning show, so I came out one year and did the 7 a.m. early morning show. And I said, does anybody show up for the 7 a.m. early morning show? And there was 2,000 people in the room.
Oh, wow. Okay.
7 a.m. early morning show.
Yes. And I was going to say, 7 in the morning is a rough time to be doing things.
Yeah, who would want to be up? You know, hey, who would want to be up early?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So where was I going with that? So here,
what you're doing here.
Yeah, so that's how I started. And what I'm doing now, I'm...
This is what happens backstage. We get weird.
Yeah, okay. What I'm doing now, I added a pre-conference where I did laser cut masks. Each student did a painting on a template, and then instead of using an X-Acto blade, if anybody remembers what that is, we walked over to the laser cutter and it cut along an Illustrator path. So it cut out the mask, and now the masks are on display in the Universal Laser booth. And so here at the show. So that's what I did first, and that was really cool. That was great. I love to get on the computers and then get off and start constructing things. I've always liked to do that. But then the thing I did yesterday, I did a 3-hour Photoshop presentation, and that's what I really enjoy to do here. Sit down, put me in front of a microphone for 3 hours, and I sort of spill all my information about Photoshop for now designers.
Do you do these across the nation or?
Around the world.
Earth.
Wait, let me do that. Around the world. Okay.
That's going to work too, is the best part about it.
And can people who aren't able to travel to where you're going around, even though you probably are going to show up where they are since you're going around the world and all, can they view any of these online? Do you record them? Do you sell them?
Wow, that's a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up. So I post all of my tutorials. I do a screencast and record them, and I put them on russellbrown.com. That's RussellBrown.com. Don't forget that second L in Russell. So,
Because you'll end up at like a phone sex site.
Well, actually, someone went
ahead
and purchased the site, and they redirect people to other sites.
Oh, see, I told you.
I should have purchased. Always misspell your name and then purchase that misspelling.
I get that.
Oh, brother. Okay.
I was just going to say, let's do something important. Then I realized, actually, yeah.
So we have a thing where we have everyone from who recorded last ask a question for the next guest.
Ooh.
And our last guest from last week, Joe Perkins, says the question for you is, what's up with Flash?
Oh.
I think that's something, honestly,
it's been in the
everyone
news.
Everyone that listens to our show wants to hear.
Well, okay.
What's the future of Flash for graphic designers?
Well, that's okay. Here's Adobe. Adobe is in the business to bring. Now this sounds like a canned thing, but it's true.
Sure.
Adobe's in the business to bring the right tools to designers so they can get their job done. We brought Flash, through Macromedia into the industry because there was a need. We all knew there was a need to publish, and the web didn't have, the ability to publish motion graphics and video.
Right.
And there wasn't a really simple way of doing that. So along comes Flash, and it's an embedded technology that sits on top and it has to run. And you can make a lot of excuses why you don't like it and why that it might bring in bugs, it might tax your system, it might slow things down, but it got the job done. It filled a need at that time. I believe Adobe's going to change and move wherever we need to go, but I don't think Flash is dead yet. I think we're going to see a lot of great things come out. New devices come out which will support Flash from HP and Google. I think if it's necessary to come out with new products, well, then in fact it is. Look what Adobe just announced with the magazine publishing of Wired magazine in collaboration with the iPad. We knew that we couldn't put Flash on the iPad, so we've developed a new technology we'll export from InDesign directly to a new Adobe Reader on the iPad. And it's a pure native reader.
Right, and it's the Wired app. I mean, a lot of very dynamic content, a lot of very dynamic things you can do in it. It's not just like a PDF reader.
Yeah, it's a whole new technology designed for the iPad. We have every intention of supporting the iPad, and we love Apple, so we're going to make this happen. And as a designer, I mean, there are more people excited about that. Publication of Wired, okay, you did it for Wired, now I want it. We intend to deliver, and I think we'll announce those tools at the Max conference in October and try and get those out. So we'll go down that path.
Well, and that was kind of why I was interested in more about like what is not so much is Flash viable, is it dead or whatever, but that it is about serving the needs of your audience and making sure, like you said, to have the right tools available to them.
If Flash needs to mutate and Steve Jobs wants us to mutate, and then off we go.
Then we will
mutate. That's my view. I'll get in trouble. No, I think it's a perfectly good Adobe view. We're here to bring the right tools to the market and whatever is needed. Well, the tool Flash is going to stay around until somebody turns off Flash on your laptop or your large computer in your office. I think it's still viable right now, and until, and we're definitely behind the HTML5, and we're on that committee, and we're making suggestions, and we're building tools to deliver, and I think we even have HTML5 tools exporting from InDesign. I think we have some.
Is that the CS5?
CS5 is supporting HTML5.
And I feel like there's a lot of people out there that have a viewpoint that HTML5 is like a magic blanket.
Not yet.
All over everything.
No. Everybody says, oh, that's going to solve everything. I'd like you
exactly.
Okay, I'd like you to take away Flash today, right now, and then replace it with HTML5. I think we'd have trouble.
I think that, there's a lot of things that you can use Flash for that you, even when HTML5 is available on all browsers and supported everywhere. Are you going to be able to do motion graphics on that? Are you going to be able to do your fully functioning
I want to say like the
motion games. Picture industry, when the big summer blockbusters put their sites together,
they use Flash.
There's a lot of animation and content, and that is not going to be built in.
They need really efficient video delivery. Isn't that what it's going to be all about? We're going to get all our movies. When are we going to buy a CD again? We're going to download it.
Years ago? Yeah. Actually, you know what? I bought one CD for my car about 2 weeks ago because I forgot.
Why did you buy a CD?
It was forced. Because it was Purple Rain and it was only $5.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, okay, that's the deal of the day right there. But seriously, that's the last one that I bought maybe
compression,
6 or 7 years.
High quality compression.
Now, I have not upgraded to CS5 yet from CS4. What are the, let's say, top two or three features that I could look forward to when I actually upgrade?
The magic in the box has to be the content-aware fill, making a panorama, stitching images together. You always run into the situation where you have that extra image, that blank space around an image. You have to crop the image because there's a little bit of transparency around the edge when you merge things together. Classic situation. We've all been there. And now you can, demoing this yesterday, now just select that transparent area and magically fill it in. This content-aware fill is absolute magic. It looks and analyzes the surrounding area, the sky or the ground. If you had a half of a person's face, would not regenerate the other half, but you would get a mutant face on the other side.
Okay.
But if it's organic vegetation, lawns,
sky
and clouds, I've seen it rebuild clouds, and it's not just like the clone tool where we sit there and we clone and we see duplicate images. It's more than that. It recreates and generates new forms. And so you don't see duplicated patterns. Yes, a few. But boy, time saving, that is the killer content aware fill. As a designer, I have the extended version of Photoshop. I like the video capabilities. I like the new 3D capabilities in Photoshop. And I can pronounce this new 3D correctly. Yesterday, this French person came to the front of the room. She said, Repoussi. Repoussi. Let's all say that.
Repoussi.
I'm taking a pass. I can't roll my eyes.
Repoussi. And I failed completely on stage because I told her I failed French and switched over to German, and then I failed that and went to Spanish. I highly recommend just go directly to Spanish. You'll be happy for it.
Now, does the new InDesign just convert all my language to Spanish? Do you have features in there yet? Okay.
Where were we at? Content Refill, Repoussi, the Puppet Warp tool allows you to grab images and move it around in a whole new way.
The amazing Chris Kelly, who's Donovan's...
At Amazing Chris K.
He's going to get way too many plugs for his Twitter from that. But he's a friend of the show, and the Puppet Warp is absolutely his favorite thing.
Oh, no. It's not just for puppets anymore, you know? I like for readjusting images that are slightly warped. accurate readjustment. Though one of my favorites, as I tap on the table here, one of my favorites has to be the HDR, high dynamic range. Yes, I'm into that, you know, that look, you know, making the photos look crazy and wacky, taking several photographs, merging them together into one photo. Really nice capability, gives you that look. And finally, folks, to cap it all off, I've just really become a fan of painting now, turning an existing photo into a painting with a new painting brush called the Mixer Brush, which takes an existing photo. And what do I know about painting? I did the photography, not the painting.
Well, you were working at Atari when you were 10. You didn't have time to learn painting.
That's right.
Skip right to pixels.
It picks up the palette of colors that you need from the photograph, and you paint over the photograph, and you pull this whole new look to your image. Something you can sell. You know, you have painting capabilities in Photoshop. However, you need a Wacom tablet. And by the way, it is pronounced Wacom.
Oh, that's going to change my life.
It's and I'll give you Wacom. The background.
Nate lives on his.
I live on mine.
So Wacom is a Japanese derivative from a Japanese company. So the Wah sound is from Japan.
And that's, okay.
It's not Wacom. It's not Wacom. It's not Wacom. It's Wacom.
I thought it was good with Wacom, but
Wacom. Think Japanese.
Yeah, and yes.
Wah. No, but there's no way. There's a wah.
Yeah, it's a wah. Wah. All right. Question for you now. With something like Content Aware Fill,
yes.
How long does that specific feature take to implement, to create, and what kind of team is behind something like that? Because it's an amazing feature, right?
So I believe that technology came in from outside, and I think we found some programmers working on that, and we purchased some of that technology and then developed more of it in-house. That might have been 2 years in the making. I think that was someone's doctoral thesis study at Berkeley. Russ on this.
Could be.
Quote him on the pronunciation not on this.
Who's sick? See, we have to Okay, back to Content Aware Fill. So you got somebody working on a doctorate, somebody sees this doctorate, somebody buys this doctorate from you, we developed that doctorate for a year and you put it into CS5. That's gone through, I'm sure, a lot. And again, I'm lying about all of this. And
absolutely. We wouldn't have it any other
way. I get to ask the next guest a question.
That's actually our last question, your question for the next guest, which will be Debbie Millman.
Okay, the question is, does Russell Brown from Adobe Systems really know what he's talking about? Or is he just making it all up?
Does Russell Brown from Adobe Systems really know what he's talking about? Or is he just making it all up?
I feel like Debbie's going to have an answer for that. She knows a lot of things about a lot of things. So, okay, Donovan, are we wrapping up here? Or is our time with Russell coming to a close?
Yep. Russell, thank you very much for being on the show.
We hope that our podcast was up to your high standards.
It certainly was.
And we look forward to seeing what Adobe brings us next.
That is the truth. We all think we've done everything. We will all be surprised.
You probably thought PostScript, it's done. We can all just retire now.
Go to the beach. We're good.
No.
Yep.
No, well, they'll come up with another repoussé in the future. They'll come up with something that will just astound us all. And we go, how did they do that?
Well, hey, thank you so much for taking time out of your
morning. Oh, he's now shaking my hand.
Yeah, that's radio.
Yeah, handshake.
So we'll be back, Donovan, we'll be back next week with special guest Debbie Millman, live-ish from the HOW Conference Endeavor 2010. If you want to hear more, head to 36point.com for all kinds of crazy content from the HOW Conference this year. But also, geez, we've been doing this for a while. There's a lot for you on that side. So I say head on over and check it out. Donovan, you got anything else?
That's it. Let's go.
Let's do it. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, we're going to do a quick sound check.
Okay, I'm testing. It's Russell Brown from Adobe Systems.
Donovan here.
Hi, I'm Nate, and that was probably the best sound check we've ever gotten out of someone.